It's time for another Terry's Talkin' podcast. I'm David Campbell, sports manager at Cleveland.com, hosting. And as every week, I am joined by Terry Pluto, award-winning columnist from The Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. Terry, they used to say back in the day, it's hot off the presses.
Yes.
But not anymore because everything is online. But big news out of the Guardians today. Andrés Giménez has reportedly signed a 7-year, $106.5 million extension, and it includes an option for the 8th year that could be worth up to $24 million. Paul Hoynes and Joe Noga, who cover the Guardians for us, are all over this. The entire contract could be up to $130 million, and apparently it's the largest pre-arbitration deal for a second baseman ever, and it's the second biggest contract ever handed out by Cleveland behind Jose Ramirez's contract last year. Boy, this was kind of a surprise. Were you surprised? Maybe you weren't. I don't know. You were just out in Arizona.
The Guardians do a great job of telling you that they're not going to talk about anything, and then they don't when it comes to contracts. They just flat out don't. I remember last year, the two big ones when I was there were Class A and Miles Straw, and neither of them were mentioned, their contracts. This is very similar to what they did with Jose Ramirez. Ramirez signed his extension in the spring of 2017. At that point, Ramirez had been first came to the big leagues, actually late in the 2013 season, just played a little bit. And then 2014, he bounced between Columbus and Cleveland, same thing in 2015. So it was in 2016 he batted 312 with, by the way, 11 homers. So they still didn't really know what they had. They knew they had a pretty good hitter, the 11 homers. And then he signed, I forgot what it was, 6 years or something like that. Well, it's similar to Giménez. In fact, if you look at Giménez's stats for this past season and Jose's in 2016, they're somewhat similar. And that's a really cool thing too. So I don't know if he's going to end up being another Ramirez, but the odds of him being a pretty good player, I think are, I'd have given it to him, I guess is the bottom line on my mind.
Well, Terry, I think this was a little surprising to me because it seems like they usually wait a little bit longer on some of these. I'm trying to think back to guys like Kipnis and some others, but they had team control of Giménez for like not just this year, but I think he was arbitration eligible next year and then two more years after that. So this is typical Guardians move, right? They're trying to get out in front of the market. And
oh, sure.
It's good for the player because they can lock into a good payday and they might be taking a little bit of a hit money-wise, but it's great security. And the Guardians get out in front of the market. And this just speaks volumes to how much they believe in Giménez as the future at that position, doesn't it?
I mean,
or elsewhere, I guess.
Practical thing. You're sitting, you're Andrés Giménez. You're from Venezuela. And you're sitting there, you can't be a free agent for, I think it's 5 more years, something like that. That's a long time.
2027, yep.
Yep. So you say, we'll give you $100 million. That's $100 million, and we believe in you. And it's very, you can even tell him, he's very similar to what we did with Jose Ramirez at the same stage of his career. In 2022, Giménez broke through at the age of 23. And in 2016, Jose broke through at the age of
23?
Yeah.
Ah.
It's
there
the
you
same
go.
Thing. Jose batted 312 that year. Giménez last year hit 297. Jose's OPS was 825. Giménez 837. Jose hit 11 homers with 76 RBIs, and Giménez had 17 homers and 16 RBIs, 69 RBIs. Basically, the numbers are the same. And at that point,
really interesting,
if you remember,
Terry, yeah.
Jose was playing all over the diamond. He played some second base. He played some shortstop. He even played a little outfield. So that was early in their career. And there are some people I know that told me last year when Jimenez started to hit some home runs, that they said, because it was a baseball person that tipped me off about the parallels between the two. He said, now you have to be a little careful with that because you're talking about one guy's on a Hall of Fame trajectory and, you know, not to say another. But what if this guy turns into a 20 to 25 homer guy with 80 RBIs and plays a gold glove second base? That's one thing. Jimenez is better defensively than Jose was at any of those positions. I mean, one thing we need Jimenez to do, by the way, I forgot about this looking at his stats. He got hit by pitches 25 times. He led the American League getting hit by pitches. He would stand in there. The sliders would come right in at his kneecap, and he would get hit. Don't do that. Get out of the way.
So it's the old Lenny Dykstra approach.
Yeah, that does not bode well for you. I mean, he stole 20 bases, was caught three times, and Jose stole 22. I mean, the numbers are shockingly similar.
Great stuff, Terry. So I want to ask you, you know how this contract stuff works, Terry. None of it happens in a vacuum. And money that goes to one player is money that doesn't go to another. Mm-hmm. What does this mean for Ahmed Rosario's future with the team? And Paul Hoynes has been reporting that they've been trying to work out something with him as well. He's a restricted free agent after this season. He's making, I think, $7.8 million. He's 27 years old. Has given the Guardians great hustle, great leadership in the locker room. Played a good shortstop, despite being yanked around between shortstop and the outfield early in his time in Cleveland.
Not early. A year ago, he opened in left field.
That is true.
In fact, when I talked to Chris Antonetti, because we talked for a long time for the profile I did with him and others, that, you know, they love Rosario. I don't think there's a big parallel in terms of how this impacts it, because they would probably only sign him to maybe like a 3-year extension or something like that. I'm talking about Rosario. So the contract with Jimenez is probably, you know, backloaded. They'll give Jimenez maybe a couple million dollars up front, and then it, you know, the payout is coming later. I don't see them giving Rosario, you know, $100 million for 5 years or something like that. I would be shocked if they did that. And they probably just said, "What do you want? You know, you want to stay here for a couple of years and see what you could get?" Because yes, some shortstops get a lot of money, but others didn't. You know, Rosario reminds me of, he's like a higher model of Rajay Davis. And by that, I mean, you look at the stats, and analytics people don't like Rosario. They just get hung up on, he doesn't walk that much, his OPS isn't as high as it should be. They don't see him play. They would say the same thing about Rajay Davis. And then when he's on your team, the players, the manager, he goes, "We love this guy. He, you know, he goes through a wall. He's there every day. He's talking to the younger players." Then the analytics guys come back and go, "What do you mean you love the guy? He walked 25 times and struck out 111 times. You can find guys that could do that." You know, his OPS, 715, it's okay, but it's not great. You know, it's like, give it a rest. He's a ball player. And so then you sit down, and there has to be a way of saying that gently to his people. I'm talking about Rosario's agents, that, look, we value him probably more than other teams. So, you know, you could go out there, and I grant it takes only one team to give the money. But, here in New York, he was not happy the last few years because he was viewed as a top prospect who didn't pan out. Here, he was viewed as the guy that was a big yawner in the trade, and you go around and like, "Oh, we love the guy." And think about this. This is the Lindor deal.
Absolutely. So here's where I'm going with all this, Terry. When the Lindor trade happened, there was some chatter that Jimenez was the shortstop of the future for this franchise. And could this move today be seen as insurance in case the Ahmed Rosario stuff doesn't work out? where they could slide Jimenez over to short. And you know, if you're Rosario and you look at all the money that these shortstops got paid this summer in free agency, and you're 27 years old, like a 2-year deal from Cleveland versus a 4-year deal from, you know, they would take you into your early 30s at much more, like, he might not be here next year. And do you think this contract could be insurance for the Guardians? All right, if we need to make this move, we get a great shortstop, young shortstop, and the money they're paying Jimenez is a great deal for a shortstop, like a good MLB shortstop who is young. I don't know. I'm just trying to think how the pieces might fit here, and if you think that there's any insurance potential in that,
David,
or is he going to stay at second base?
Yeah, because he's a Gold Glove winner. They thought he's a good shortstop. They think he's just an exceptional second baseman. And they have shortstops on top of shortstops. Yeah, they got Arias, who played very well all spring. They have Rocchio, who's by the way, that's Roberta's new Quan guy, is Rocchio. Remember, she does now. He's a top 10 prospect in the system. You know, she doesn't know that. She just goes to games and picks guys, and so. But I could see why. You know, he moves. He's just so fluid and plays with a lot of vigor. So you've got those two, and you've got Angel Martinez, and they got all these shortstops. They figure between that group, they'll find one. And you know, if you need to go play him and as a short, you can do it. But that's not in the plans. You're correct. I mean, there's a lot of money that went to shortstops, but I'm just telling you, it's a very. I talked to some people from other teams that. They're just like, they yawn about Rosario. They just do.
And I think you're right, Terry. I think he likes it in Cleveland. And he likes the way he's appreciated and the way the culture or the organization. And, you know, he's spreading the word that this is a good place to play. So,
yeah,
either way, it wouldn't surprise me if he stayed or went.
And they're still talking him up this spring. I always kind of pay attention on that. He is remarkably consistent in what he's really done. And you could go even to his last year with the Mets, where they played 162 games. So his last year with the Mets, that would have been 2019, he batted 27, excuse me, yeah, his last year with the Mets, he batted 287, and then in Cleveland the 2 years, 282 and 283. His OPS, 755, 730, 715. I mean, you just could write it in. 15 homers, 11 homers, 11 homers. You could just write it down. He doesn't walk, and he strikes out about 120 times. And those people don't like that. He steals 19, 18, 19 bases. I mean, you just know what he's – Francona loves that too. I just put him down there. And, you know, he wants to lead the American League in infield hits.
And he'll be right there again this year with that. So
yeah.
All right, Terry. The other big news that came out of Guardians camp this weekend was, the pitching rotation seemed like it was all set going into the season this week, and then Tristan McKenzie tweaks his arm. He's going to be out up to 8 weeks with a strained teres major muscle in his right shoulder. He was pitching against the Reds on Sunday. He was going to pitch Friday against the Mariners in the second game of the season. And now he can't. Guardians made some moves today. They have added Hunter Gaddis to the rotation. He's going to start that game Friday. And Xavion Curry has taken Gaddis' spot in the bullpen. So they added Curry to the roster and moved Gaddis into the starting rotation. How concerned are you about the Guardians being without Tristan McKenzie for potentially up to 2 months, or not that big of a deal? What do you think?
I think it's a big deal. Not only the Guardians, but most teams fall into the turn that frown upside down most of the time when they give you these timetables on arm injuries where there's not surgery involved. I recall that they thought Bieber was going to be out like 4 to 6 weeks. It was 3 months. And their Savali, they were always wrong in how long they thought he was going to be out with his variety of injuries. Because these guys with their arms, you know, they're cautious in bringing him back. And secondly, you don't know. It's a muscle in the back of his shoulder. And also, McKenzie does have a history of some arm problems. So they're going to be very, very, I think, guarded with him. So then you take him out. You know, he was a guy that made every start last year. And you turn around and you then say, oh, Savali. I mean, I was there at the game. He got hit in the foot with the line drive. I mean, he said he's fine, but it's like stuff's always going on with that guy. And then Plesac, I just don't trust him as anything more than a fifth starter slash bullpen guy. Some of their best pitchers in the farm system are not quite ready to bring up. That's being Gavin Williams, Tanner Bibby, and I mean, until Espino's out for something or other, I forgot what his problem is too. So you're into this kind of second category of prospects. As you mentioned, Curry made the team. Now, the other guy in spring training, along with Tim Herron, when I was talking to pitching coach Carl Willis, the other guy that Carl told me that was coming on like crazy and nobody was talking about, because I said, who are the two guys that you like in camp here that nobody's talking about? He said Herron, and the other, he said, was Hunter Gaddis. And he said, boy, we asked a lot of that guy last year. Remember, Gaddis had a game where he gave up five homers and just had – He said we really kind of rushed him up in that. He goes, he's coming around. He's got a really good arm, and we like him. But we'll see.
Yeah, real
how
quick,
the rest
Terry Gaddis last year 0-2 with an 18.41 in his two starts. The rest of the season he was 8-6 with a 4.01 ERA in 15 games at Akron and Columbus, and 14 of those were starts. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, it's just and he had the one game where he gave up five homers, and it was one of those where he came up and. I also heard in that game, somebody thought he was tipping pitches. I don't know if that's true or not. Tipping pitches means there's something in his thing. I mean, he pitched 7 1/3 big league innings last year and gave up 7 home runs. Yikes. So we'll see about the guy. He was a fifth round pick in 2019. So he's only thrown 250 minor league innings, you know. He struck out a lot. He struck out 340 in 250 innings in the minors. So who knows on these guys until they pitch. But, you know, McKenzie and Bieber, they're your two big-time starters. A guy I wouldn't mind them signing an extension to, I don't know what his where his agent is, and that is Quantrill, who I think has been very much underappreciated here. He makes his starts. He just, you know, you can just count on him. I mean, he doesn't have any one dominant pitch. He throws mostly a sinker. I mean, he's a guy now, you know, since he's come to Cleveland, he's 23-8 with a 3.11 ERA. And, you know, the people get on the record, they say, well, records are deceiving. And then, okay, well, throw it out. 3.11 ERA. And he struck out they don't like him because he doesn't strike out. I thought about the analytics guys. 262 strikeouts, 350 innings. You know, my view is he's a sinker ball pitcher, gives up a lot of ground balls. I just think he's good. So
and he's making, I think, $5.5 million this year, and he's got two more years of team control after
exactly.
this one before
so
he's
a free
agent.
So time
the timing,
to say, look,
I think, is right. Yeah.
Another one of these guys. He was a hot prospect. He was a top pick for San Diego. They became so discouraged with him, they put him in the bullpen. Cleveland trades for him, and I was looking, and they, you know, when he came up with San Diego in 2019, he was 6-8 with a 5.16 ERA, and they decided, nah, we think he's really more of a bullpen guy. And so when Cleveland traded for him, that was right at the end of the COVID year. He just pitched in relief a couple of times. But I remember talking to Antonetti and Chris saying, no, this guy's a starter. He goes, it's got just a little bit we need to tinker with, but we can get this guy to be a really good starter. We didn't trade for him to pitch in the bullpen. He goes, this is a starter. So they have extreme confidence in their ability to take pitchers and fix them. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, because the other guy they thought they could fix in that trade was that guy Logan Allen. Remember him, a lefty? Not Logan T. Allen, who's in the minors
the one
still
who's
with
still
the
here,
Logan
yes.
Allen. They were not able to fix that Logan Allen, but they did fix Quantrill. And, of course, in their view is, give us two of them and we'll fix one.
And Yeah, you're right, Terry. We've seen them do this time and time again. It's just you don't want to have to do it going into the season. Like the season's long enough already, and now they have to do it from the jump. But if anybody can figure out, they can.
Yeah, so. They can. And just there'll be somebody coming up from the minors that we won't anticipate as a pitcher too, because I don't think anybody at this point a year ago was talking about Xavier Curry or Hunter Gaddis making a team a year later. I know I wouldn't. I don't remember them ever mentioned in the spring of 2022. I don't remember Tim Herron ever mentioned in the spring of 2022, who's made the team. So, and as they proved last year, bringing 17 guys up for the first time, they're not afraid to throw them in there and see what happens.
All right, Terry. You know, we like to, when news breaks, we like to go with it right on the podcast as soon as we can. But we're going to scoop the website here. We're going to put you on the hot seat. What is your prediction for the 2023 Cleveland Guardians for their, I don't know if you want to predict the playoffs or just regular season record.
Regular season's hard enough because you're talking about a different schedule. Remember, they don't play the heavily weighted Central Division schedule anymore. They're playing everybody's more or less equal. So they're all 92-70 last year, and that's central weighted. Of course, people said, I think I had some strange emails from some fans. Well, you know, they had that really good record because they displayed in the Central Division. Now that's all changed. And I feel like saying, oh, I get it. So like Minnesota and Chicago, the two, they'll be playing the old schedule, and Cleveland will be playing the new one. Now they're all playing the same schedule. It's just been changed. So, but I agree with their general premise that the odds of them winning 92 games, I would say remote. I just don't think they're going to come in that high at all. So I've got them. I keep writing down 88 or 87. I'm going to go with 88 and 74. And they win the Central Division with that kind of a number because it all goes down. Everybody's going down on the win total in that division.
That's a great point, Terry, and I'm going to come in at 87 wins. I'll go one below you. I just think there's some question marks here going into the season. They always start slow. Zanino's health is kind of up in the air. They're working him back slowly. I think you're spot on there. So I'm going to go 87 wins. So
yeah, and that might be good enough to win the division too. I'm not
for sure.
I mean, the blessing also they had last year was Tony La Russa managing the White Sox. I mean, they had a bunch of injuries. But you're a Chicago guy. I just thought it was just an incredibly stupid idea to do that with.
The whole season for the White Sox was kind of just a mess.
What was La Russa, 74 years old or something? You know, I could say that. I'm on Medicare. I'm allowed to say somebody's old. This is not age discrimination. This is common sense.
Well, there's plenty of people managing and coaching at that age that do an outstanding job, but he didn't. So it's more about the performance.
And he had been out of the ball the whole time, too. That's the other thing. Remember, he had been out for several years in the front office and advisor roles. It wasn't like he keeps managing, like Dusty Baker just keeps managing year after year. Dusty Baker's like Methuselah. I don't know how old he is. It doesn't matter. He's in the dugout. He does a great job. But, and he's smart enough, same thing like what Francona does, now Tito 63, to use his coaches and the front office. Keep an eye on their guy. They keep telling him, no, you do the big picture stuff. You take care of the people. You know, we don't need you going out there doing these other things that are going to make it harder. I mean, interesting thing, like what the Guardians do just to even help Tito. They'll send us an email about every 8 to 10 days, and they'll say, we're giving Tito the media day off before the game today, and Mike Chernoff will, you know, be handling the questions or something like that. It does two things. One, it allows the front office to step in case there's some questions about that. And two, it just gives the guy some time off. I don't know why other teams don't do that stuff, by the way, but the Guardians do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead. You were going to say the Guardians do a lot of stuff that
other teams should do.
Yeah. From analytics on down to other stuff.
To even media things. There's nothing wrong with having your GM come out every few weeks and just sort of pinch hit.
All right, Terry, let's take a break. Hey, you know, a lot of people don't know this. Dusty Baker is 73. His toothpick is actually 74. Little known fact. So. Let's take a break. We'll come back.
He's Methuselah. I mean, he'll be like 98. And he's got the energy in that, but he'll tell you he's not managing like when he was 58 or 48.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to get into the playoff-bound Cavaliers and why we should appreciate what they have done. A lot of news coming out of the Browns this week in Arizona. Jimmy and Dee Haslam have been speaking. We heard from Kevin Stefanski about the state of the franchise. And we've got some really good Hey Terry questions this week, Terry, including one about comparing these Cavs to the Cavs of the Price, Doherty, Nance era. So I want to get your take on that. All right, we'll be right back on Terry's Talking. We're back on Terry's Talking, David Campbell and Terry Pluto. Terry, let's get into the Cavaliers. They are 48-28. They have clinched a playoff spot. They stand fourth in the East, the first playoff spot without LeBron James since 1998. And I was laughing because in Chris Fedor's postgame coverage after Sunday night's win, the players in the locker room, I think it was Jared Allen, was asking everybody, how old were you? And the last time the Cavs made the playoffs without LeBron in 98, and some of the guys weren't born. Some of them were, I think, 2 years old, just to show you how long it was. But I thought you had a wonderful column about fans should appreciate how hard it was to do what the Cavs have done. And I know you tied it into the game against Houston on Sunday night. Why don't you talk about that for a minute?
Because we saw this challenge recently, not just this past few years, and LeBron left time too, but when LeBron left the first time, they were struggling. In fact, the year four of LeBron's departure, I think they won 33 games with Mike Brown.
But 33-49, yep.
I was still not very upbeat about that being a team that was going to get much over 500 or anything of that sort. They did have Kyrie Irving, and they did have Tristan Thompson. But Kyrie Irving, by the way, at that point, fans may not know, was at war with Mike Brown because he was mad that Mike Brown wanted him to defend. I mean, you want to come right down to it.
Outrageous.
Because remember this. First of all, Mike Brown is one of the nicest guys in the world. So it wasn't like Mike Brown was, you know, belittling him or anything like that. But Mike Brown was very strict on, you know, how they are to play defense in that. And as I think that was the first sign of what was to come with Kyrie. And, of course, then LeBron came in and he was able to help change that whole thing. I had one NBA person say to me, you know, LeBron's greatest achievement was, and I'm like, what, winning a title in Cleveland? He goes, no, keeping Kyrie on the rails for 3 years without him going off. He goes, look at it now. It's one of the great achievements in NBA history. And it is. I mean, by the way, in Dallas, they're having all kinds of stuff go on. Okay, back to this. So the point was, they were going into year number five without a lot of hope, I may add, until LeBron came back, which then changed the whole dynamic. Houston, who they beat to win the thing, is, I don't know, I think they've won like 30% of their games. And you could go on and on. How, by the way, you know, San Antonio is now in its fourth consecutive losing season with Popovich as the coach, you know, Popovich
Hall of Famer,
Hall of Fame coach.
Yep.
You can get bad, Orlando, Detroit, get bad and stay bad. And they did it without a number one draft choice in the whole draft. They did it without a LeBron or some other major free agent coming in here. I mean, what free agent have they signed in this rebuild?
Nobody big. Like, it's been all small signings.
Yeah, just
like
guys.
Mid-level exceptions and other guys. Yeah,
They did it all drafting and trades. They did it in Cleveland, so where supposedly nobody wants to come play. And they did it when the whole league, when the analytics in the whole league, and I do like stats. When I say these things, I like stats, but people who are analytically driven have to be entering the human element of it. And the analytics was all about, you know, everybody should be between 6'3 and 6'8 for a while there in basketball, positionless basketball. Well, the Cavs looked at that and realized that yes, that's wonderful if you have a bunch of guys that are like LeBron James and Paul George and that. But what if you can't get them? So then you got a bunch of me. I mean, hey, Isaac Okoro is right in that thing. He's 6 foot six, and you know, I'm glad he's coming around, but he's more of a role player. But what if we could get a 7-footer that nobody likes anymore and do something with him? And basketball always favored tall people until it didn't. But for decades, it favored tall people. Why? Because they're closer to the basket, you know. And if you watch, take somebody who's 5 foot shooting the ball at the basket and somebody who's 6 foot five shooting the ball at the basket, it's simply easier for the 6 foot five person to shoot the ball from 20 feet actually than it is for the 5 foot person, because they're letting it go higher and that kind of thing. Now, there's always exceptions. So they did it by going big. They did it with Jared Allen, and they did it by taking Mobley. Houston had a chance to take Mobley. Just think if they did, and the Cavaliers ended up with Jalen Green. Green's got a chance to be a good scorer, but he's just running around out there with Kevin Porter Jr. and all these other guys, just jacking up shots and no accountability, and it would have been a mess. Jim Jones and I were talking the other day about that, and Jones thought the same thing. He said, as a former big man, you know, in the NBA, Jones said, you have to have a coach who values the big men, or those other guys will just ignore you out there.
Terry, I don't want to spend too long on this, but I pulled the top scorers from the 2013-14 team. I just want to run through it real quick.
Yeah, please.
Kyrie Irving, Deion Waiters, Luol Deng, Spencer Hawes was the fourth leading scorer on that 2013-14 team. Tristan Thompson was the fifth leading scorer, C.J. Miles and Jarrett Jack, and then Andy Varejão after that. And then I pulled the 2018-19 Cavs, which was another team that you were talking about. They won 19 games, and the top scorers on that team, Kevin Love, Jordan Clarkson, Colin Sexton, Jetty, Rodney Hood, and Alec Burks were your top six scorers.
Actually, I like that 19 team a lot better than the 14 team.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, granted, just to make your point, it's very easy to get stuck and spin your wheel.
So you sit there and you look around. Okay, so you find out. That's what I meant. First of all, to bring back to the 14 team, read those top four guys again.
Okay, from the 2013-14 team, you had Kyrie at 20.8 a game.
Yeah.
Deion Waiters, 15.9. Luol Deng, 14.3. Spencer Hawes at 13.5 and Tristan Thompson 11.7. Then CJ Miles.
I remember to tell you this. I know David Griffin took over in the middle of that season. They had fired Chris Grant because they were unhappy with that roster.
Yeah,
that you're talking about right there.
Yeah.
So I recall that David Griffin was telling me, he goes, "I got to figure out how to at least get us up over 500 here." I mean, nobody knew LeBron. You always was hoping LeBron would come back, but, you know, nobody knew. So he had traded for Steve Hawes and, you know, as you said, the Jarrett Jack guys like that. They were just bringing guys in, hoping somehow to win as many games as you lose. With no thought of – I'm not talking about winning a title. No thought of putting together a team like we're watching now in Cleveland that has a chance to win 50 games and do it for the next several years. It's hard to do this because, as they will tell you, no big-time free agent is going to come here. LeBron is just an exception to, like, everything in basketball history just about. And, you know, the problem is if you keep losing 18 or winning only 18 games, even if you're drafting in the top of the draft, like that draft of the moment with that Mobley was in, Cade Cunningham went number one, Jalen Green went number two, Mobley went three. I mean, there you are. Even if you look at the draft where a gutsy pick really was Darius Garland, and you look at that was the Williamson went number one. They knew he was talented, but everybody was worried about him getting heavy and getting hurt. The weird thing was Morant went number two, where there were no bad stories about him coming out of school at all. And now you go, like, what is with this kid? You know, he's dynamic player, but my goodness, that stuff was crazy. And then you went into like DeAndre Hunter and I forgot who else. They nailed those draft picks at 3 and 5. You could say, well, it fell to them, but it was not a given. Not a given at all that those guys are going to be good.
Yeah, and you're right, Terry. They deserve credit for not messing that up. And they played it all right. So, I want to move along. We're running a little short on time, but I did want to ask you. So the Cavs are a game and a half behind the Sixers for third mm-hmm. place in the East right now. If the Cavs finish third right now, and the way things are trending, they would play the Nets. If they finish fourth, they would play the Knicks. Is it worth the Cavs trying to go for that number three spot? And they say they want to, but from a matchup perspective, do you think it's better for them to face the Knicks or the Nets in the first round of the playoffs?
There'll be a pain in the butt either way. Both of those teams. I give Vaughn credit, who took over New Jersey, you know, from that mess with Durant and Irving and how he's had those guys hanging. He's got a bunch of tough role players, as we saw when those two games when the Cavs played them. I mean, the Nets are probably a lesser team than the Knicks, but they are hard to play. So I guess the answer is it doesn't matter to me. Either way, it's going to be difficult.
I would like to see them go for that number three spot and try and play the Nets. Because I'll tell you why, Terry. I think when the trades happened, it took a lot of air out of their sails, and they've lost 6 of their last 7.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
And you talk a lot about who on the other team keeps you up at night.
Yeah.
You know, other than Bridges, like, I don't know that there's anybody in that team that's an offensive threat that keeps you up at night. And you've been in New York in Madison Square Garden, Terry. People there are crazy for the Knicks, mm-hmm. and there's something about that MSG crowd that when it gets behind the Knicks – Weird stuff happens sometimes. I think it'd be a tougher place for the Cavs to try and play. So that's just my initial thought.
I'm having an old man's moment. He's basically the Knicks' best player. He's a left-handed shooter. He's about 6'8".
Oh, Randall.
Randall, yes.
Yep.
I've always liked Randall. Randall actually has low post moves, that kind of thing. Barrett's turned out to be a better player than he thought he would. I didn't like him coming out of school. I mean, you're correct. The Knicks are a tougher matchup. But I guess I'm just saying, don't discount the Nets. I know they've been struggling of late. So we'll see. But either way, you know, I'm just really glad we're talking about this. It's so cool to see what has happened in Cleveland.
Sellouts, fun times at the arena every night. It's been a memorable one.
And remember, this is a league where, like, John Morant, what was that? You know, or Irving. This is a league where guys demand to be traded in the middle of the season. Or, like, well, if Irving wants to be traded, I want to be traded too. You know, you have all that kind of, or you have guys, I'm just going to go home. They have guys sometimes just go home. Or teams tell the guy, go home. By the way, I don't want to beat it to death because of what he accomplished in Cleveland. But if you look at the numbers of Kevin Love in Miami, it's more or less what we saw here. He's really been struggling. That is another move where the Cavs were probably correct. As a tough one, but he's had trouble. His shot, there's something wrong with it. It's a line. He's always had kind of a line drive, but it's really a flat-footed liner. And I was reading some stuff too out of Miami, and they're discouraged by that pickup.
Yeah, 15 games down there and 7.6 points per game, and he's shooting 38.8 from the field, Terry, and 29.6 on three-pointers. So yeah. not what he wants. But
yeah, it's just like he just went. Now, whether there's a hidden injury in there, I don't know. But I don't think there's any reason. You know, people thought that suddenly he was going to click a switch and go back to being the guy he was a year ago. Now, when you look back at it, the anomaly was how Kevin Love played last season, because the other couple of years before that were injury riddled, and then the injuries came back again this year.
All right, Terry. Well, the Cavs are playing tonight in Atlanta at 7:30. Chris Fedor will be there covering that for Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Then the Cavs are back home against the Knicks on Friday, and they are home Sunday against the Pacers at 8:00. And then next week, I love this idea. I know we've talked about it. The back-to-back road, back-to-back. in Orlando, Tuesday and Thursday, both games in Orlando at 7 o'clock next week. So I think that's one of the best ideas they ever had was back to back in the same city. So, all right, Terry, let's get into the Browns here. A lot of news coming out of the NFL owners meetings this week in Phoenix. Mary Kay Cabot, our colleague who covers the team, is out there, and Jimmy Haslam and Dee Haslam were speaking to reporters, and they were asked, should this year be playoffs or bust? Well, I guess the word was, is there an ultimatum this season on Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski in the eyes of the Haslams in terms of make the playoffs or else? Do you think it should be make the playoffs or else for this front office and coaching staff?
Well, I divide the two up. By that, I mean, let's see how the group of players that Andrew Berry brings in with this last free agency thing, let's see how they play. If they play pretty well, then I'm not interested in dumping general managers, because, David, you and I had a little discussion about this other day. When they change general managers, what does the new GM automatically do?
Remake the roster.
Yep, dumps a whole bunch of the players because figures, well, if they fired that guy, they must not have liked the roster. Clearly, there's some to be, because usually there's a problem if the GM is fired. Secondly, I think this is a verdict on coaching, what we're going to see, because Kevin Stefanski is supposed to be the quarterback coach. And to Kevin's credit, when you look at from Case Keenum back in Minnesota to Baker Mayfield early on here to Jacoby Brissett, he's had far more hits than misses when working with quarterbacks. But, you know, in terms of pure talent, Watson's got the most. But I was discouraged on what I saw from Watson. I have to watch this. This is one of those because I didn't like the trade. And this is a thing I even mentioned sometimes to younger media people. We have to be careful when we say the team we cover does something we do not like, not to nitpick that player to death just to prove we're right. In other words, be overly critical of them. Nonetheless, I was not real encouraged by what I saw from Watson. So this is a whole coaching thing. Can they get him fixed? Because they have all the opportunities now to OTAs, all that stuff, ready to go.
Well, I don't want to go all hockey on you, Terry, but the Browns are kind of reminding me of back in the NHL in 2004, 2005, there was a lockout, right? And the players got locked out. And that kind of was a line of demarcation in the sport. It went from like fighting, hooking, and holding and the old-time hockey to the new speed, skill, not a lot of fighting era. And the guy who was in charge of my favorite team, the Blackhawks, back then was a guy named Dale Talon. And they kept telling him, like, hey, after the lockout, you better be ready. The game's going to be different. You better be ready. You better be ready. And he didn't believe it. And they came out of the lockout, and the Blackhawks were terrible for 2 years because they were behind and they didn't get it right when coming out of it. And then they did. They drafted these two guys, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, and they won some Stanley Cups. And I think about that sometimes because I feel like that's what happened to the Browns last year. Like the Browns were convinced that the NFL's a passing league. We need to load up on corners and pass rushers. And what happened? Like old school football broke out in every Browns game, and they were just completely caught unawares. And I do feel like getting back to my original question is like everybody's kind of had their mulligan there now. And it's like the Haslams are talking about Kevin Stefanski has learned a lot since he's been on the job. And Andrew Berry might have not set the roster up for success last year, even with the Watson thing, with the defensive line. You need to have guys that can tackle and get off blocks in your front seven. So I feel like they need to see substantial progress this year because these guys are in their prime and they got to get it right. And if it doesn't work, like they're going to have to decide to change.
Right. And
not this year, then next.
And on top of that, they love to fire GMs and coaches together. They, I cannot think of a time where the Haslams fired a coach or also dumping out the GM. They did keep Joe Banner around long enough to hire Mike Patton, but then they fired Joe Banner right after that, which is one of the more bizarre moves they've made over the years. So you're correct on that. I will say that I do think the most pressure is on Stefanski and the coaching staff. Okay, so they just spent $50 million on Tomlinson to play on the line. They brought in a bunch of defensive tackles. They brought in, to get Bubba Ventrone and Jim Schwartz to come in here, they're paying big money for those guys. I can tell you that. And so they're making all those moves to see what happens. And by the way, you know who else is on the line on this? It doesn't change their status because owners are owners and owners are owners, and that means they're owners and they can do what they want. But the Haslams put themselves way out on the line too with this on their reputation with the Watson deal. Because if this thing fails, they look really, really basically, you brought in a highly controversial figure that fractured your fan base, gave him an outrageous contract, at least in the eyes of the rest of the NFL and most other people, and he doesn't play well. And it's ownership-driven. They can say whatever you want. Whenever you're bringing in a player with all that baggage, it is an ownership decision, even if every football person wants it done, because you're the one that has to deal with the public relations fallout and that. So I think that's another reason they're saying we need to get this done, because not our jobs are on the line, but in many ways their reputation is on the line here in terms of trying to finally get it right. I mean, that losing it every year and all the quarterbacks and all the coaches and all the GMs, and you're the one common denominator.
Yeah, and I think, Terry, Jimmy Haslam was trying to say, reading between the lines, was everybody's very results-based, which is like playoffs or bust or whatever. But I think what he's saying, and we know this, we've seen enough football, we'll know at the end of the season if this looks like this is on the right track or not. And I mean, if there's an injury or a fluke play happens and they lose in the play, like, we'll know, all right, this thing is trending up or it's not. And I think that's kind of what they're saying is we'll know.
Sure.
They'll know, too, if they're set up for success or not.
Yeah, suppose they go 10-7, but for some reason miss the playoffs. Okay, fine. I'm good with that. And Watson looks like he's really coming around. Yeah, that's why you don't say playoffs or bust. But you better take that 7-10 and turn that thing around. I'll tell you that. You better flip those numbers.
Absolutely. So, all right, we got some Hey Terry questions. We're running a little long here, but we're going to keep it moving. So, hey, before I forget to mention, if you want to send us a question or comment, you can send it to us at sports@cleveland.com. Just put Hey Terry or Terry's Talking in the subject line, and we'll try and get it on next week's podcast. So, all right, you ready, Terry? Mm-hmm. This one is from Rich Smith in Columbus, Ohio. And he says, Hey Terry, in recently reading your vintage Cavs book, available at TerryPluto.com, I might add, it reminded me of the Mark Price, Brad Doherty, Larry Nance teams of the late 80s and early 90s, whom I loved watching, and how that team was similar to the current Cavs team. Both teams have great guards and big men, played good defense, were well coached, and have good guys who are very much like each other. How would you compare the current Cavs at this stage of their development to the Wilkins Fratello coach teams of 30, 35 years ago? And again, that's from Rich Smith in Columbus. Thanks for that, Rich.
Okay, the Fratello teams really, he came in as that team, the Doherty, Nance, Price group was in decline. So basically, he's excused from discussion there. But they were very similar. I would have loved to have seen Donovan Mitchell in the same backcourt with Mark Price and go to war with the rest of those guys. They could have eked out a championship. It's hard, in retrospect, it's hard to wonder if anybody could have beaten Jordan in his prime, because he went 6-for-6 in the finals, winning titles. But I do see that was a team that liked big men, because the GM was Wayne Embry, a big man himself. And so he had Nance, he had Hot Rod, and he had Doherty, all 6'10" or taller. And he would bring in guys like Tree Rollins as for backup centers for size. And then you had, I've always thought that there have been very, once Garland was in his second year and got going, that Garland is a modern version of Mark Price. Very, very similar. And the rest is there. I will say this, Mobley's going to be Mobley might even right now be better than Larry Nance, and he's going to be much better. He's just more, he's even more athletic. But
wow, and that's just saying
like,
something.
It really is, just because his passing is better. He handles the ball better. I mean, we see now Mobley going, you know, full length of the court, and you don't go give it to a guard. You go for it. Go to the rim. What, they can't stop you. Where Larry's problem was, he did not handle the ball that well. But in terms of shot blocking and all that, it's a fun question. And the big thing that Rich is getting to, and Rich, by the way, has written me for years and is really a terrific, terrific fan that sees beyond the first level of stuff. He gets it. Is the chemistry. Lenny Wilkins developed it. He came in here. By the way, the Cavs were dysfunctional when Lenny Wilkins took over. That was Mel Turpin and Keith Lee and John Bagley and a whole bunch of other guys that were just, they were just a mess. And he came in with these young guys, much like JB, and he shaped them into a team that just kept consistently was in the playoffs, and you liked watching them play, and they liked playing with each other.
All right. Here's our next question. I think this will be the last one. It's from Andy Getz. Andy's from Denver. He says, "Hey, Terry, your colleagues at Cleveland.com had a podcast recently asking the question, will Kevin Stefanski, Terry Francona, or JB Bickerstaff win a title first in Cleveland?" And he says, "What is your answer to this question?" And Andy's referring to Dan Lobby from our Orange and Brown Talk Browns podcast, kind of coordinated a cross-beat podcast project where they discuss this. So Andy is wondering, Terry, which one do you think would win a title first here?
If you were to put them all in a, like one of those model, computer model things where everybody gets the same type of team and only those are the three people, I mean, Francona wins it because he's gotten to the World Series three times. He's won it twice. So with those other guys, you know, they haven't done anything like that. The rules favor the Browns. That's the other frustrating thing. The rules favor the Browns in winning a title because they're in the league where Green Bay could win a title. You know, it doesn't matter what your market you're in the NFL. It matters how you do your job. But they don't do their job well. So they're guilty until proven innocent right now. And that's why I think where Jimmy Haslam was going with that, we have to begin to prove we're innocent. In other words, we have to prove we're competent. The Guardians are competent. We just got to figure out a way to win where everybody gets seven, you know, the top teams get seven cards at the table and we got five. We got to figure out how to turn our five and to knock out their seven. And then in the middle are the Cavaliers. And, you know, the Cavs could win a title. I don't know. I'll let you pick on this one, David, because it's always really hard.
It is, because the rules are different. But yeah. I just think the Cavs with JB, they have this young core, and I do think the NBA is set up where you can keep your own guys mm-hmm. long term, and money is not an issue for the Cavs. I mean, we look at the payrolls they had during the LeBron years. They went over the cap to keep the guys together. And I just think this is set up, and you know how it is, Terry. The World Series, Guardians get there in 2016. It comes down to a pinch hitter in the bot. You know, you never know what's going to happen in baseball. I think the more cracks you get at it, and I think the Cavs are going to have more cracks at it. Mm-hmm. And you look at the Browns. There's so many great teams in the AFC. Just getting to the Super Bowl is going
to
just be an incredible.
How about getting to the playoffs?
Yeah.
I'm serious. How about getting to the playoffs?
I'm going back to the question. Though.
No, here we are. But this is a very important point, David. I mean, the Browns are talking about all this stuff. They've been to the playoffs like once since, when was it, 2000?
In three?
No, not even that. 2002.
You're right, 2002. Yep.
Once.
Yeah.
They got nothing to talk about.
Well, anyway, I'm picking the Cavs in this question.
Okay, and that's for good. And you're correct. Dan certainly will okay the budget to keep guys and pay the luxury tax. So that allows them to have that advantage. And just it's just harder for the Guardians. That's why, you know, you go back and you look at what happened in 2016, where you're up 3-1 on the Cubs, and you don't finish the deal. That really haunts the Dolans in this franchise. I think it would have changed the narrative about him as an owner And it would have, I'm not saying just allow them to have a super budget, but I just think it changed. It was very costly to them in the long term. So it's a good question. But I'll tell you one thing. In big games, I know which of those three coaches I want. He's the guy that says he only has two pairs of jeans and his favorite place to eat in Cleveland is the ballpark.
That's right.
You really do need to
if you haven't checked out Terry's column on Terry Francona,
it was hilarious.
Go check it out. It's a inside look at what makes him tick, and it's vintage Tito. So
it is, and it's so genuine. See, that's why he doesn't have a pretentious bone in his body. Everything, he is the working class guy. I mean, he's a guy in the off season. He goes down. He lives in Tucson because he runs the University of Arizona, and he goes and hangs around. He loves basketball, especially college basketball. He hangs around the Arizona University basketball team, watches basketball practice, and talks to the coaches. And he's just, I guess he's got to be around something with sports because for those 2 months, or there's no baseball for him, so he's got to go do that.
That's right. All right, Terry, again, if you want to send us questions, hit us at sports@cleveland.com. You can also find Terry on Facebook, and he'll bring the question to the pod here, and we'll get into it. So do you have any – well, two things. Do you have any appearances coming up, and also do you have a book recommendation for this week before we wrap
up?
Well,
A, there's no book and no appearances, so we're going to let them – actually, things are like on hold, I think, till June or so, because I try not to schedule anything in the spring when I know the Cavs are going to make the playoffs, because I don't want to run into anything like that. So there you go.
All right.
I will have a book next week.
Sounds good. I'll try and bring something too, and we'll kind of trade ideas. So, all right, everybody, enjoy the start of baseball season. March is awful in Cleveland. It's cloudy and rains every day, and it's 37 degrees endlessly, and baseball's here. So that means good weather's on the way. Guardians start off this week in Seattle, and the home opener is a week from Friday. So it's all changing. And we will talk to you next week on Terry's